here.
Are you still here? First meeting of the year. So our first meeting of the year, we do a lot of just kind of calibrating over the purpose of Shack and talking about Shack. So the very first thing is normally normally to remember at every Shack we have to have an opportunity for public comments. So if somebody wishes to come in, they fill out the purple form. The purple form's over there. We don't have anybody that came in to fill out the purple form, but if they did, they could. That was particularly important for us to have that when we were talking about homosexuality, the child abuse, human trafficking curriculum. We did have somebody that filled out the form once. And so we still have that as part of our requirements for this year. The next thing is for us to introduce ourselves. So let's go around and introduce ourselves. Seems to be a habit lately, but let's like wing the first. The last meeting I had, we went first.
I think that was yesterday.
And talk about where you are from, or if you have children in the district, or even if you have children that are not in the district or have graduated.
Dwayne Teets, lead counselor at Marble Falls High School. I've got four children. All of them are out of my house, and they did not attend Marble Falls High School. They were only injured. But I'm done.
Clark Fields, principal at Falls Epic. Similar, both my kids graduated. One still in school at college.
Hi, I'm Dr. Shanna Fancher. I am the Executive Director of Special Services for Marble Falls ISD. I have one kiddo who's going to be 28. That's hard to believe.
Sneaks up.
I'm Stephanie Berry. I do payroll for the district. I have a sophomore at the high school.
Melissa Fields. I work in the Curriculum and Instruction Department, and I'm the proud mom of two Mustang graduates.
You didn't talk about them.
Isn't it
costume?
Maybe it is
costume.
Yes.
I thought so.
But that's weird.
You're not proud of it.
I'm proud of it for you. You should make sure you use it.
Thank you.
That costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm Dr. Heather Metzger.
Look, if I was that smart, I'd be using it everywhere I went.
I have only been able to say that for a year, but anyway, I have two boys, one 21, one 24. The 21-year-old did graduate from Marble Falls High School, and I'm the Executive Director of Secondary Education, work in CNI.
I'm Leanne Harkins. I work in CNI, Early Childhood Coordinator. I have two boys that graduated.
Lana Counts Ramsey, Highland Lakes Family Crisis Center, Prevention Education for way a bunch of years. And my children are in their mid-30s, so it's been quite a while since they've been in the house.
Amber Clark, and I have two children in the district, two girls, a sixth grader at middle school, and then a fourth grader at Spicewood Elementary. And I was the Spicewood Elementary nurse, and I'm now doing nurse sub for the district.
I'm Kelly Barton. I'm an ex-school nurse too, and now I work at our family business, Backbone Valley Nursery. I have a junior at UT, a senior daughter at Marble Falls, and a freshman son at Marble Falls.
I'm Dr. Haggard. I do general practice in the area, and I've got two kids in the district. I have a second grader, Colt, and a seventh grader at the middle school, and my husband's a teacher at the science teacher at the middle school. So.
And I'm Amy Van Dorfey, and I'm the mother of this junior in high school, Elin Gosling.
I am that junior. I am Elin Gosling. And I'm a student at Marble Falls High School.
I am Caitlin Puckett. I'm a district social worker, and I have a 2-year-old who's not old enough for school again. So.
I'm Stella Schatz. I have a 39-year-old, which is kind of weird. We're almost the same age now. I just can't believe I'm changing everything. Anyway, she grew up in Atlanta. We moved here 6 years ago, and I'm the president of the board of the Pregnancy and Life Center. I'll work closely with you.
Yeah,
come on,
I got two Marble Falls graduates that are at Baylor, and one that just started Marble Falls, so I'm sorry for anybody that left my high school. Hang out.
I'm Yarda. I'm with NCNI. I have a 20-year-old who graduated from Marble Falls High School, and I have a sophomore at Marble Falls High School. In fact, one of the policies we'll see today, it used to be 8 or 9 pages, it's now 14 pages. Every time there's a legislative session, there's more responsibility and ownership that comes onto the shack. And so when we go to talk about membership, it's going to be really important that we kind of think about and consider and try to recruit back. We had a number of parents that fell off. We're very thankful for their service. They helped us through human sexuality. They helped us through all of the stuff we had to adopt last year. We still are one of the most important district committees that a district has. And so when we receive our next board update, which we expect anytime October, November, and then there'll be a special session, and we'll receive another one in January or February from the Texas Association of School Boards, there will be some more things in there that will be on us to be able to discuss at the shack. So the board policies have been updated. Make sure you have the new folder. We will have a Google Drive that will be shared with you all so that you can access them in there. But for today, we put them as paper version for you. For the first one, first just discussion for us to just remember. Legal policy is the law. We can't change the law. So whatever it says when it says legal means that legal policy, it's the law. The one that said local, some of it might be the law, but it's really a detailed explanation of how we do it here. Now there's a balance, and I think Marble Falls has a great balance. Our board policies that are local don't micromanage, but they're also not way too broad where it's hard to figure out what's gonna happen. So we have it right in the middle. There's just enough, we're pretty transparent, but yeah, we're not micromanaging anything. Anytime we want to change something in board policy and local policy, it goes to the board. And the board reads it, the board gets feedback, and then the board has to vote to change that policy. And so that's why it's good to kind of have that balance. What are the most important things to have in there for the board to approve? What do we need to have more as an administrative regulation, which is our regular operating procedure, but it doesn't need to be in policy for the school board to approve. And so legal versus local, and for Shaq, we have both. And both have started to become quite extensive. So if you open your folder and you go to BDF Legal is all about district committees. And I can project it up here, but really we're just gonna kind of go through the quick version because you want to hear me talk about this for an hour, right? And so we're going to go through the quick version. Page 1 talks about our requirements for posting meetings. Stephanie, she takes our minutes. We need to then post our minutes. We post audio or visual video. We choose to post audio. We keep audio of our meetings. And then we post that on the site. We have until the 10th day after the meeting to post. Just so you know, Callie Curran listens to the audio. And she does that, she listens to the whole audio just to make sure, like if you whispered something to somebody next to you and it picked it up on the video and it might be embarrassing, then we may need to either cut it out of the video if we can, if it wasn't where everybody could hear, or we give you a heads up. And so now there's very few people that go back and listen to our videos. However, we just want to make sure if you whispered something that it's not picked up. We don't want. So Callie Curran goes back and listens to that. Stephanie takes our minutes, and then we post our minutes. We go a step further than most other districts. We post all of our presentations. So we post our presentations on the website also. Talks about that the board actually appoints members to SHAC. Now, our board doesn't really appoint. We make recommendations, and the board says, yeah, those people would be great. So we're going to recruit some more parents on. And then the board will help us to recruit parents on, and then the board looks at our entire list and they approve our list. There's different ways to approach that. The board shall appoint. And we just have agreements with ours. So we should have people represented from all these different areas. I do have to get a new elementary counselor to serve on here. We have a couple classroom teachers that are on here. They just were unable to come today. And so we do have a couple teachers. Wayne, of course, is on here. There are several school administrators on here. Clark represents a campus principal. Business community, law enforcement. So Mr. Ortiz has served on here. He said that if we have something we would like his expertise in, he's more than glad to show up. A lot of times, though, the the schedule is pretty hectic for him to come to the SHAC meeting. We have talked to one of the SROs that may serve on SHAC, so we'll try to have law enforcement present on here. If you'll look, we have, you know, we have people from various organizations. We don't have to have one from all 11. We cover almost all 11. We do a, we must have a physical activity and fitness planning committee. Everybody volunteered to put their first, second, third choice. I'll show you in a little bit on subcommittees for this year. Looks like we will be able to get to subcommittees this year, which is good. And then we have these required postings that we have to have. Some of them go straight to SHAC, some of them don't go to SHAC. They're at various places on our website. So some are on the SHAC page, some are not. You'll turn next to EFA. So, just so you know, one thing that's different is we used to have in our old folder EFAA. EFAA is no longer a board policy. EFA is the new board policy. And so, EFA, this is where you're going to see a lot of the work that we did in the previous year. So if you will turn to page 404. You can read all this about instructional materials. Just so you know, EFA is going to end up changing. The legal will change. There were numerous laws that were passed around instructional materials. We'll talk about that in a minute. But for now, page 404 there, human sexuality materials. That's what we addressed last year. It talks about it needs to go through and have the advice of your SHAC. Okay? If you turn. There's not, by the way, EHAA legal. That talks about required curriculum again. If you will turn to page 4 of 14, this is the policy that was 8 or 9 pages long. That is now 14 pages long. Okay. This is talks about coordinated school health programs. Remember, our coordinated school health program for K-8 is CATCH. This talks about that you need to have a coordinated school health program that falls under us, and we talked about coordinated school health programs last year. If you then look at 6 of 14, go to 6 of 14, you can see it refers to the School Health Advisory Council, the duties that we have, okay? And so these are recommendations that fall under us that we will get into and discuss more this year. That we've not been able to get into and really discuss some of these things for the last 2 years because we have been filling legislative mandates that have come through for SHAC. And so we're going to go back and talk more holistically about health and wellness. So page 6 of 14, you can see it talks about how much health education students receive. There's also physical education, nutrition, substance abuse prevention, mental health services, comprehensive school counseling program, all of those things. Turn to 7 of 14. It still goes on. Number 7 in particular, we're going to need to talk about number 7 in a little bit more detail. As far as a program, an actual program that we look at to adopt. You can see at the bottom of page 7, it talks about that SHAC actually makes policy recommendations to the district concerning recess. And so we'll talk a little bit about recess, what recess looks like. And physical activity, you can see the top of 8 of 14 there continues. Then it gets to human sexuality instruction. All of us here served on SHAC through the discussion around human sexuality and what we are allowed to teach and not allowed to teach. Turn to page 9 of 14, that continues human sexuality. You see right towards the bottom in there, parent consent before instruction. Just so you know, we already have paced out almost all the dates for when the parent notifications go out for all of these different things. And we'll share that with you at the November meeting. The counselors have worked hard on a calendar in regards to when these different things will be shared. you can see right there at the end of 9 of 14, that did have to be, that was part of Texas Education Code that was added in regards to we are not allowed to pass out condoms as part of human sexuality education. Then, if you look at 10 of 14, this is all new from last, when we passed human sexuality 2 years ago. So this is new from the previous one from when we passed. This passed last December. It talks about separate classes. And then we hit at the bottom of 10 of 14, abuse prevention instruction. Okay? So that's child abuse, family violence, dating violence, sex trafficking. We talked about that almost all of last year. Okay? And just so you know, we have dates already sketched out for this year. If you turn the page to 11 of 14, continues. Okay, it talks about the notice. We provide some of the notice and registration, and then we also then have to have the consent before instruction that we have the dates where we send those out. Many of those things can't be, they cannot be, if you look, page 12 of 14, parent consent before instruction, you see number one, may not be included with any other notification or request for written consent provided to the parent other than the notice described above. It has to be the only thing going on, the only thing communicated at that time. It can't just be, it can't be included with some other things. At the bottom, it talks about the availability. You go to 13 of 14. It talks about how we allow people to view what we have. It talks about purchasing agreements if we had to purchase and the different parts to it. It ends with 14 of 14. 14 of 14 does not say that SHAC will approve the character education program. However, if you look after number 10, in developing or selecting a character education program under education code, a district shall consult with a committee selected by the district that consists of parents of district students, educators, and other members of the community. We're the ones that are going to talk about character education this year. And an actual adoption of a program. So the counselors have taken these 10 traits. They have calendared them out for the school year by month. They have talked about the activities that they're doing each month. We don't have an adopted program that we use. We use a variety of resources. So we'll talk more about what we use. We'll look at a variety of programs with the counseling staff, and that will be one of the recommendations that we look at for this year around character education. So we go to the next. That's a big policy. All that is law, legal. All 14 pages of law. If you look next, we have EHAA Local. It's one page. This was added after the year that we, at the end of the year that we adopted human sexuality instruction, our curriculum. Remember, all districts were supposed to be going through that year, choosing what they were going to use with their SHAC. So this was added for both of those things, human sexuality instruction, and then instruction on prevention. All of these things were for the process. We checked all these boxes as we went through our process. Okay, so as we went through our process 2 years ago and as we went through the process last year. If we were to change any of the programs we have, we would have to engage back through this process. Okay, it's not that as a SHAC, we just can't all of a sudden decide, we don't like that. The counselors decide they don't like that. They just really want to do this. Okay, we're going to vote on it and do it. We have to go through all this if we wish to change the materials we have for either of these two things. Okay. Remember, last year was the start of implementing much of this. After this year, we'll be able to have even more feedback from the counseling staff and from the others who deliver that instruction. Then FFA Legal is our wellness policy. The legal one, again, is the law. So it talks about the law according to the wellness policy. If you look in the middle of page one there, at a minimum, a local school wellness policy must include. We will talk about all these things throughout this year. Then, if you go all the way over, I think that was the main, there was one other part here, and I'm just missing it. At the bottom of page 3 of 4, if we go to change our health services that we provide as a district, we need to take it through a committee, and we actually need to have these, hold a public hearing, and there's several other things that need to happen. If you go to FFA Local, that is where, FFA Local, this is where we actually develop some recommendations around the wellness plan. This policy is broad, so we will talk more throughout. We started the discussion of this, and then we had to do a bunch of that legal stuff that we had to get done. We're going to come back and visit FFA Local. So FFA Local, as you can tell, it's our wellness plan. We talk about a variety of things, nutrition guidelines. You can see where we currently stand as far as on policy, on nutrition guidelines, on food and beverages sold. If you turn the page to 2 of 3, food and beverages provided, wellness goals, nutrition, promotion, physical activity, other school-based activities. All of this we look at. All of this is part of our wellness plan that we'll look at this year. Right? That is the end of all of the board policies for today. So, again, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of a school district's shack. Very, 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 very important. And so, and for us to have a great balance on our shack. I know I didn't read them in detail. I gave it all to you for you to go back. You can read in more detail. It's our job to make sure that we are following everything that we need to follow. But for us to get all this work done, we're going to have to go back and start recruiting again. I'm super thankful for everybody, for all of you that you've served. We are very thankful. We're very thankful for the people even that had to drop off because they have other commitments. They stuck with us for 2 years through a lot of things that we had to sort through, because you guys know you were part of it, but we got to get some more parents. And so the stuff coming through the legislature, we're going to have more and more that's going to come, that it's going to be that Shaq is the one to handle. Not only that, I will tell you that Shaq is one of the most trusted committees in a school district. And so when Dr. Gassaway is looking at considering something new or how something might impact, one of the first things he does, and Dr. Allen did this too, is, well, let's maybe take this to Shaq. How about next year we take this to Shaq? How about we ask Shaq this? So Shaq is one of the most highly regarded committees in the system. And so it's important that we look at our membership. Right now, this is our membership. I'm gonna talk parent membership because we have tons of employees in Shaq. We don't need any more employees in Shaq. We need an elementary counselor. But, you know, we don't need any more employees on Shaq. But for Marble Falls High School, 6 people that are in here or that are absent but have committed to still stay on are parents, and we have 1 student. It would be great if we had at least 2 more students. I think there's a health science student that's interested in serving, and so you can even help us if you need to help get a couple more students. Marble Falls Middle School, we have 3 parents, so 3 people have our parents. It's okay if you're both. Some people are, oh, I have a high school there and a middle school. That's okay. We do not have a parent from Falls Creek High School. We have 1 parent from Colt Elementary. We have no parents from Highland Lakes, 2 parents from Marble Falls Elementary, and 1 parent from Spice Creek. So it's important for us to have representation across the entire district. To bring back to the campuses, to share, we've tried to make sure that we have representation where we can communicate with all the campuses as far as employee-wise, but that's where we're hurting right there. If we look, though, the other thing that's important is not just for us to have representation across the district, across the campuses, but we need to have diversity within our community. So as we talk about issues and as we talk about things, we have diversity across the community. And so I pulled, it's really small, but I will share, I'll share it with you. You'll get to see the presentation. But I pulled, actually Dr. Fields pulled our demographic data for us. And so this is the first demographic data. If we look at ethnicity, 49.94% of our school district is Hispanic Latino. So ideally then, 49% of this committee would be Hispanic Latino. Ideally. And as we're talking about trying to recruit Jack members. Then we look down here, 0.5% American Indian, 1% Asian, 1.5% African American, 0.05% Native Hawaiian, 44% white, and then 2% two or more. So really, just for us to get diversity on our committee, there's some additional here. Under our student programs, if we look, we show our percentage for dyslexia, gifted and talented. We want a variety of parents in here. We don't want everybody who has a gifted child. We need a variety of parents who have children that have all different types of needs across our district, as well as, you know, representation across where, you know, we are at now, just so you know, 22.8% of our students are considered emergent bilingual. That's TEA's new, relatively newer term for English language learners, but emergent bilingual EB. So 23%, 928 of our 4,000 kids are emergent bilingual. I don't think we have a single person that's emergent bilingual. And so that's a quarter, almost a quarter of our. So trying to get, again, get more parents. Just so you know, this one says Title I, Part 8. We are a Title I school district. All of our campuses, except for Falls Career High School, qualify for Title I funding with the federal government. That's because every single one of our campuses has over 40% students that qualify for free and reduced lunch. That's how we qualify for free breakfast and lunch for all of our kids. We're part of the SEP program. It actually helps the more kids who eat, no matter if they are economically disadvantaged or not, the more kids who eat, the less we have to pay per meal. So it helps for more kids to eat, but some of our campuses do have a higher poverty rate than others. Spicewood Elementary ranges between 45 and 50% poverty rate. A lot of people don't realize that. They'll equate Spicewood Elementary to an Eanes school or a Lake Travis school. They're not. They're a Title I elementary school. And so important for us to consider that as we talk about different types of access to services, or how we're looking at what services we want to have, also in how we're discussing what our community has, what might be needed. SHAC helps inform our community also. And so we can get to a point there. Yes, sir?
What classifies as special education? The 17%, what do you got in order there?
Look, we're going to talk to the insurance before you, so you don't hear me just call.
We have a myriad of different eligibilities. There's 13 different eligibilities that are with the state. They range from speech only, which is a student who has maybe an articulation problem. They can't say their R's, they can't say their W's or TH's, so forth. And they only receive speech services, all the way to students who are in a self-contained classroom all day long. Those are students that are intellectually disabled, and so forth, and everything in between. Auditorially impaired, visually impaired, specific learning disability is one of our highest. Autism is one of our highest. We have orthopedic challenges, students with orthopedic challenges, just any disability that you can really think of. That data was actually taken at Snapshot, which was the last week in October of last year. We're currently sitting at just over 20% of our population in special education.
So does the dyslexia number, does that fall into that percentage, or is that isolated?
Some of them do right now. Currently, we have just under 50% of them falling into special education, and the other portion falling just over 50%. Falling into what's called Section 504 of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which means that they're not being pulled out necessarily for anything other than dyslexia classes and for accommodations. However, the state made a change this past year, and we now have 2 years to do a full individual evaluation with all of those students to see if they are eligible for IDEA or special education, because dyslexia is no longer, you can no longer receive
dyslexia services, so dyslexia classroom, in anything but special education. So we have 2 years to move all those students who are currently in a 504 over to special education.
So I added 2 slides, Jenna, from the snapshot from last year. Melissa had sent it to me. I added primary disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so primary, this shows the what she was talking about in regards to disabilities.
So as you can see, the specific learning disability is at 41.5%. And then speech impairment is closely second at 19%. And then autism is our third highest, which is currently at 13%.
What does learning disability mean?
That's a great question. So you can be learning disabled in a number of things. What that means is dyslexia now falls under specific learning disability. That's a learning disability in basic reading. But you can have a learning disability in math or a learning disability in written expression or in any number of things. And basically what that means is that you have strengths and weaknesses. You may be very, very high intellectually in one particular area, and for some unexpected reason, you're low in this one area. So although you would have a learning disability in this one area, neurotypically, there's some strengths there that we cannot explain why there's this difference. And that's what establishes whether or not you have a specific learning disability or not. Most of the time, these students are very, very high in a lot of areas and very low in one specific area. Our highest number of students who are identified as specific learning disability are reading impaired. So they have an impairment in basic reading and or written expression. But it can be math, calculation, or any of those things. Oh, this is the special education in terms of their instructional arrangement. So at the top, you see speech therapy only. That's 16.9% is speech therapy only, which means that they only get out of class for lessons with a speech-language pathologist. Typically, those are about once a week for 30 minutes a week. And then homebound is students who cannot leave their home. They are so sick or so disabled that they cannot leave their home.
Only have a private duty nurse.
Yes. Or a hospital, which means that they are confined to a hospital. Mainstream means that they get most of their instruction with a general education teacher. However, they might get inclusion support where there's a special educator that comes into their classroom and helps them inside that classroom. Resource room means that they are pulled out for one academic setting or more. So for example, if you have a student with a specific learning disability in reading, they may get pulled out in a small group with a special education teacher during reading to give them additional support. So that's what resource room means. VAC is vocational help, and that means that those are high school students that are receiving on-the-job training to support their out-of-high-school post-secondary needs. Off-home campus, which means they're just at a different campus. State school, we don't have any there. We don't have any in residential care. Most of the students who go to residential care are students whose behavioral needs exceed what we can provide in the district. And so far, we've been lucky enough to be able to provide the services that are needed outside of residential placement inside the school district. Self-contained are those students who are so disabled that they are not able to attend to the general education curriculum. So the TEKS are the standards, the Texas standards. And so we are teaching them on an alternate where they're accessing those TEKS. So their disability prevents them from being able to access those general education TEKS. So they're self-contained. Full-time early childhood are those 3 and 4 year olds who have special education. They are disabled under special education that need pre-K. So they're 3 and 4 year olds who need pre-K, and we serve them in a special education early childhood class. And then non-public day school are those students who have have a disability, a low instance disability, or some other disability that we cannot provide services here, but we outsource that. So for example, a student with an auditory impairment, deaf or hard of hearing, who needs constant support with translation and ASL and audiologist and all those, we'll send those to a residential day school for the deaf.
So great question.
Great answer.
And great answers. And so just to keep in mind for all of these things, not just for our parent representation, but in the background, we were looking at all of this as people brought forth recommendations the last 2 years to this committee. So was there Spanish available? Were we able to accommodate the content for students that have learning disabilities? As we move forward and we're talking about the wellness policy and we're talking about recess and physical education, and we have a variety of students in our schools, and so you're able to reference the demographics, like I said, not just for us to get better parent representation, but then also the decisions that we're making for our students. So we're more aware of where our students are. We can give you, this is from Snapshot last year. We can also share with you where we stand so far this year. We're finalizing coding. Snapshot is the last Friday in October, and so that's when basically the state takes a picture of our enrollment, and our funding and all kinds of things is based on that. Questions?
I have questions about some of the acronyms.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of acronyms
there
on these.
There are a lot of acronyms.
There's BDM and EHAA or BDF and FFA. Can you tell me what those are?
So the board policies are grouped into groups. All of the E policies are curriculum. And so a long time ago, somebody decided that is how it would be grouped. And so if you go to the district page and you go to school board, you go to school board policy, we use TASB for school board policy, and they're all
which
that
is Texas
right
Association
there.
Of School Board. There's another
acronym.
Okay, yeah, because
Texas
we keep talking about the board.
School board.
Yeah, and I'm like, is that our school
yes.
board? Because that's not exactly legal.
It's a big group.
Okay.
And basically, this is how the policies are grouped. And so you can see anything that is B is governance. So we had the one that was our very first one, and that's talking about governance of district level committee. The majority of what we will look at will be E or F. E is all of the curriculum and instruction things. F is more student related. That's where we have our wellness policy. So our grievance policy is, and several other things. When you click on here then, the people from the Texas Association of the School Board, they're the ones that make up the letters for each one of the policies. So if we click on E, scroll, these are all of the E policies. So for instance, we can click on EHAA. EHAA comes up. You can see here there's a legal policy and a local policy. Now you can read it by scrolling on the page. I'll tell you, I always find the easiest is to just click the PDF, and then it comes up all nice. You can scroll though, same here, local, you can click PDF, the downloads, it's all extracted. So they decide the lettering.
Just does it correlate to
it thinks the website's in them, so okay. So we can open S, so this says students. So you can see this is where attendance, homeless students, alternative ways that we can give credit, compulsory attendance, school safety transfers, medical treatment, diseases, there's immunizations. It is the law that students are to come to school immunized. And there are very few exceptions. That's not just that Marble Falls ISD decides that they want all the kids immunized.
Legal is Texas Association of School Boards directed.
Legal is directed by Texas Legislature, it's law.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the Texas Association of School Boards puts it into our policy for us.
And local.
We tell Texas Associations of School Boards what we want, and they tell us if it's against the law or not. And they could say, you know, yeah, you can't do that because it's actually against the law. So then we go back and revise. And we say, okay, is this good now? And they say, yes, you can do that. And then they make it all nice and pretty, and they post it to our website.
But it's board, it's local board,
yes,
approved. So
gotcha.
If it says legal, yes, that means the legislature says we have to develop policies related to this. And TASB helps us to do that so that we're in compliance with law. And then if we want to create a local board policy, then TASB helps us to create those to make sure we're compliant with law. We present it to the school board votes on it, and then that's how it's placed in the policy.
And we can even tell TASB, hey, we would like to do this. Do you have recommended wording? And they give us wording that we could start from, and then we revise or make adjustments based on. Great, great questions. Because we are going to get more board policies as we go through this year. Which gets us then. So we have bylaws. We're not going to review the bylaws today because there are several things in the bylaws that automatically have to be changed based on the most recent legislation. So what we'll do is for November, we'll review our bylaws in more detail. I gave you one example where EFAA is no longer a board policy. It's quoted in our bylaws. We need to remove that. We need to put in the new policy. And just some other things that were adjusted from the legislature. So we'll go over bylaws next time. However, in the bylaws, it does say that we need to have a secretary and a co-chair. And so Stephanie is willing to continue to be secretary. However, she said she also would give it up if somebody else has a burning desire to be secretary. Does anybody wish to do secretary? Or is there, I don't know, do we want to take nominations? Who would like to nominate somebody for secretary?
I'll nominate Stephanie.
You nominate Stephanie.
Does anybody want to close nomination?
You're seconding that. Who all votes yes for Stephanie to be secretary?
Aye.
If someone is interested, please say so. Just to give up front, though, Mr. Moonwalt is willing to continue as chair. If somebody else would like to be chair, though, or would like to nominate someone else to be chair, feel free. Any nominations for chair?
I nominate Mr. Moonwalt.
Second? Who's the second?
I second that.
I move to close nominations.
All those yes for Mr. Moonwalt for chair? Raise your hand,
aye.
Okay. That is one part of the bylaws we need to take care of today. So Stephanie will continue as secretary, and Mr. Mimal will continue as
Thank you
co-chair.
For your service.
Thank you, yes. Okay. Just to review previous work that we've done over the last 2 years, in case you did not remember just the important work, and there's a lot more important work for us to continue to work on. We made a recommendation for health materials and human sexuality materials that we reviewed for K-8. We recommended Quaver for K-5, PE and health, CATCH to remain as our coordinated school health program, and 6-8 health, Good Heart, Little Cox for human sexuality. Then last year, we made recommendations regarding prevention of child abuse, family violence, dating violence, and sex trafficking. Remember, we recommended Play It Safe for kindergarten through grade 8, and that's just some of the Play It Safe materials. And I put in the main topics reinforced again in each grade. Just so you know, on Play It Safe, we already have all the dates booked for the spring for Play It Safe already. Just like I told you, we have all the dates booked for human sexuality instruction. We have the dates booked with Erica Melton. She is still serving on SHAC, by the way. She just could not make it today. Erica Melton, working with the elementary counselors and the middle school counselors on the dates. One thing we learned from last year is we did a parent preview night here. We had like two parents come, and even though we streamed it, she couldn't give the passwords for people to access the materials remotely. So this year we will do 3 parent previews. We're going to hit the various areas of the district. We're going to do one at Spicewood, one at Marble Falls Elementary to capture Colt in Marble Falls Elementary, and one out at Highland Lakes. parent previews, and then we have the dates for the parent letters to go out and the dates that we will do the instruction. On not a number, at this time what we are working on is getting our counselors signed up for the not a number for them to be able to deliver the curriculum. In this state that we are in right now, as far as students' mental health, it is really hard to pull all four counselors off at the same time. And so we are working through how we will get all of the counselors trained. It is a full-day training. And so we cannot pull, and we said we wanted the middle school counselors to also be trained so that everybody could work with the kids at the high school. And so we're working out right now where it may be that we're sending a couple of them to the training that's far away, and then we are offering to be a site, a regional site, to host the training, and then we could have our other ones attend for the regional training. It could be that some community organizations wish to send people to get trained also. And so we're working on the not a number. We have dates that we want to implement in the spring, and then getting training done this fall. That was just information that we had over not a number. These are huge, what we took care of. Legislative updates so far. So more will probably happen in the special session. But right now, legislative update, I really narrowed it down to five things. One of the first things is parental rights and the discussion around parental rights. We went through this discussion last year as far as what does the curriculum, what does the law say we have to do, and do we go beyond the law, do we not go beyond the law, where do we go? But then also just the discussion around, you know, one, I'm going to use it in the context of library. Like, I may not agree for my child to read this book, so then I want the book gone from the entire library and all the libraries in the entire district so nobody can read it. Some of that is what we'll have to talk about as a group. So we really are, as we talk about these important topics, a lot of these topics align with a lot of the discussion around parental rights. And we had this discussion as we went through adopting human sexuality curriculum and the child abuse family violence curriculum. We talked about that. Mental health services, there were over 25 bills filed for mental health in regards to public schools. I don't have to count how many in the end, but we'll talk more about mental health services, how mental health services are being provided. We do utilize TCHAT from the University of Texas, but they also only have so much room, and kids only get so many sessions. It has been beneficial for our students who have gone through it. They have helped to connect those students to additional counseling. We'll talk more about mental health. Opioid prevention, we're going to have to talk about an actual program for opioid prevention. Right now we've shown a video. We need to talk about an adoption of an actual opioid prevention program. We still do have Narcan on all of our campuses in our school district. We have the most at Marble Falls High School, but we have Narcan at all of our school districts. We have a couple extra doses out at Spicewood, and we have a couple extra doses out at Highland Lakes because those are the far ends of our district. All of our law enforcement and emergency responders know that we have Narcan that they could also access if they were needing to access if they were to get exposed. Now, keep in mind, when we first did this, many of our police officers did not carry Narcan. And now I know that depending on the police department you're in, you may or may not carry Narcan. But we have that across our entire school district. So, yes, ma'am.
Have they used any yet?
I knew you were going to ask that question. So I actually just had to answer an open records request. We had not used any doses of Narcan until this Monday. We had to administer a dose of Narcan. And so it was appropriately administered, and it was administered by the school nurse. The school nurse was available and was there in the emergency situation. We did order new cabinets, just so you know, that are on all of our campuses. There's a big cabinet now that's located beside the AED. It holds EpiPen, Narcan anti-stop relief kit. They are visibly noticeable. At the high school, there is more than one, and then there is more than one at the high school. And then we also have additional AEDs across various areas of the high school, additional EpiPens, and then Narcan is located at various points in the high school. So like at the high school, the athletic trainers have Narcan, which is closer than to band athletic training in that area there. And then, like I said, we have a cabinet towards the back of the school and a cabinet at the front of the school.
Did they get AmbuPens?
Yes. We have those. Dr. Madrigal gave us the, and you, why don't you explain what those are?
So it's like a mask in a bag that you can force air into somebody who can't breathe for themselves, which would be the concern with opiates overdose. So
we do have those. We acquired all of our Narcan from Bluebonnet Trails at no cost. Bluebonnet Trails provided us all of our Narcan. Our Narcan most of it expires in 2025. I think we only have two doses that expire in 2024. And then we purchased those. Dr. Madrigal gave us instructions on exactly what to order. We ordered the, here's the official term. We ordered the kid version and the adult version.
Yeah.
Like we have both.
Yeah.
So, the pediatric and the adult ones.
Yeah. Narcan's gone over the counter since then, the nasal spray, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the pedi version is, but the adult version is.
Oh.
So you can just go into the pharmacy and buy it.
So we only have the one, we have the one, it says 4 milligrams, and it's got two doses in the box. I can show you.
Yes, sir. Anyone in this room right now could take Narcan and it wouldn't do nothing to them anyways. It only does something if you're under the influence of those. So if anyone accidentally, you know, I don't know any reason why you would accidentally use it, but if it did happen, it wouldn't hurt anybody.
Yeah. Right. If you weren't sure if somebody was
correct,
if you gave it to somebody that you thought they overdosed, but you weren't sure and they weren't, it's not going to do nothing to them.
Correct. We had so we have all of our staff. They've used student health videos over the summer. A new video that we inserted in for all of the staff to view was how to administer Narcan. They actually took a video from Washington State. Which some people found interesting, but it's hard to find the right video, and that video had some demonstration in it that made sense. The one just straight from the company was it was not the best video, but we had a video that everybody watched and that everybody checked that they watched the video, and so every staff member that we have on our campuses has watched the video on how to administer Narcan. Part of that does talk about no harm, like better to administer than not administer if somebody is showing those signs.
And it's the same dose for the nasal for adults and children.
What we have, that's what you're saying. So we were told to give the same. Yes.
Yeah.
We have standing orders, so for our nurses to administer the EpiPens or the Narcan, we have to have what's called standing orders. We have to have orders from a doctor. Dr. Thomas in Marble Falls, she issues our standing orders, and so we have the standing orders for the nurse to do, but any of us could, all of the staff also watches video on how to administer an EpiPen, and then all of the nurses at all of the campuses do a demonstration to the staff, and the staff have to come in and sign off with the nurse, and so any staff member could administer the EpiPen. They're in the boxes out the hall, and then any staff member can administer Narcan. Just due to the legality of the licensing with the nurses, we have to have the orders for the nurses.
Yeah, the EpiPen is a different dose for children.
We do.
Yeah,
yes. Thank you. We have the pediatric dose for EpiPen, and we have the adult dose for EpiPen in the boxes at all of the elementary schools. And we have had to administer, I don't have how many times, but it is multiple times a year we do have to administer the EpiPen. And we call 911 upon administering the EpiPen. Same as Narcan, we're calling 911 as we're administering the Narcan. With the EpiPen, we're calling 911 after we administer the EpiPen. Instructional materials, that will definitely come up again. I guarantee you we're going to talk about character education, but we'll have to revisit and talk about some things in regards to instructional materials, and then e-cigarettes and vaping. So a new law that was passed this summer that a lot of school districts were getting the heat for, that I just would like to make clear that it was the legislators that did pass it, is that if a student is, if they have a vape, they go to Epic. They go to the DAP. That was a law that was passed. There's not district discretion there. Now, there are some things where, like, if your DAP is full, then you could do this or this, but as soon as a space opens, the kid goes. And so there are some laws that were passed around that we'll make sure that everybody has a better understanding of. And we are implementing. Remember last year we talked about Catch My Breath? So the counselors have calendared out the Catch My Breath lessons. Many of those lessons are going out in October. And so we'll show you the schedule. And so we are implementing Catch My Breath for vaping prevention. But just so you know, it was interesting. At the start of legislative session, many of us in education, when we heard all the talk, we thought they were actually going to pass laws that made it where kids receive fewer consequences. And then it turned out that the laws that were passed were the kids received some of the most severe consequences in the school district for vaping, which was fascinating to just watch how it turned through the legislative session. Those are areas of focus. Our next meetings. So we have four more meetings that will go. We're required to have four by law. We'll have at least four more meetings, but we'll have some subcommittee meetings, which gets me to subcommittees. I asked you which of these you would like to serve on, what your choice was. We had a great distribution. So we'll actually have all four subcommittees. We'll be able to have all four. There are things that we need to address across all four. We had five people, four people, eight people, five people. And remember, we're still recruiting SHAC membership. So, the last thing that I had for us is that if you know of somebody that you think would be great to serve on SHAC, and remember, they need to have a mentality like you do, that we are here to serve all the kids in the district and to look out for all the kids in the district, and not somebody who's just going to push their own self-interests, please talk to them, and you can let me know. Or if you don't want to talk to them, but you're like, hey, Art, I think this person would be great, I'll call them and say, somebody nominated you to be on SHAC, and I'll explain what SHAC is, and we'll try to get them on. So our goal is, by the time we meet next time, we'll have more representation from parents on SHAC. And we do have a couple that are absent today. Any questions? A lot of introduction stuff, got through a lot. Next time will be a lot more exciting. I think we're good then.
All right. So call this meeting adjourned 5:34.